With more than 1,200 Palestinians dead, activists against Israel's attack on Gaza escalate their protests to civil disobedience and arrests. Also, walking from North Carolina to D.C. to save health care in a rural community, coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for July 31st, 2014, here on WPFW 89.3, your station for jazz and justice. On the Ground lifts up voices of activists and activism here in the nation's capital. I'm your host, Esther Averam. Today we'll go outside the Israeli embassy here in D.C., where yesterday protesters were arrested after holding a demonstration with mock gravestones and participants dressed as Israeli soldiers carrying cutouts of automatic weapons. And we'll also speak to Mayor Andrew O'Neill, who completed this week a 270-mile walk from Belhaven, North Carolina to Washington, D.C., to draw attention to the Republican policies that are denying millions of Americans health care, and that he believes has closed his town's only hospital and left some of his residents to die. And of course, we'll take your calls at the bottom of the hour. But first, our headlines. West Africa is facing the worst outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus in history since February. More than 1,200 people have been infected in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. Nearly 700 have died. Liberia has shut its borders, banned funerals and other large gatherings, and is considering quarantining certain neighborhoods. One of Liberia's top doctors died of Ebola over the weekend, and two U.S. healthcare workers in Liberia have also fallen ill. A Liberian man died of Ebola on Friday in the Nigerian city of Lagos after arriving there by plane, marking the first recorded case in Nigeria, Africa's most populous country. Ebola is highly infectious and has no known cure and can kill up to 90% of those affected. As the Gaza toll continues to climb, Israeli historian Ilan Pappe told Democracy Now! That Israel made a decision this year to be a racist apartheid state.
Israel is at the crossroad, but it has already made its decision which way it is going from this junction. It was in a junction where it had to decide finally whether it wants to be a democracy or to be a racist, an apartheid state, given the realities on the ground. I think Israel in 2014 made a decision that it prefers to be a racist, apartheid state and not a democracy, and it still hopes that the United States would license this decision and provided with the immunity to continue with the necessary implication of such a policy vis-a-vis the Palestinians wherever they are.
Pappe is a professor of history and the director of the European Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Exeter. He is also the author of several books, including most recently The Idea of Israel, A History of Power and Knowledge. Activists from Canada delivered a convoy of water to Detroit in a show of protest against the shutoff of water to thousands of residents. More than 14,000 households have seen their taps turned off over unpaid bills since April. The group Council of Canadians delivered trucks carrying hundreds of gallons of water to a recent protest in Detroit. Local officials recently approved a temporary 15-day moratorium on the shutoffs for residents to catch up on their bills. A group of activists have set up the website DetroitWaterProject.org that lets anonymous donors cover the bills of residents who cannot afford to pay. The Obama administration has expanded the National Terrorist Watch List system by approving broad guidelines over who can be targeted. Reporting for The Intercept, Jeremy Scahill and Ryan Devereaux obtained the government's secret watch list from an intelligence source. The guidebook says that to be deemed a terrorist target, irrefutable evidence or concrete facts are not necessary. Both known and suspected suspects are tracked, and terrorism is so broadly defined that it includes people accused of damaging property belonging to the government or financial institutions. Other factors that can justify inclusion include postings on social media or having a relative already deemed a terrorist. The guidebook's criteria also apply to the no-fly list and selectee list. In the statement, Haina Shamsi of the American Civil Liberties Union said, instead of a watch list limited to actual known terrorists, the government is secretly blacklisting people as suspected terrorists and then giving them the impossible task of proving themselves innocent of a threat they haven't carried out. Nearly 300 leaders in a growing grassroots movement called the Our Power Campaign, that's ourpowercampaign.org, will converge on Richmond, California from August 6th to 9th under the umbrella of the National Climate Justice Alliance. Indigenous peoples, peoples of color, and working class white communities are creating interconnected local strategies for an equitable, just transition away from an economy based on extraction of fossil fuels and exploitation. This gathering will build toward the United Nations Climate Summit in New York City on September 23rd, where our people and our power communities are determined to make their voices heard. The year 2013 saw record-breaking growth for solar electricity generation as the photovoltaic and concentrated solar thermal power markets continue to grow, with over 39 gigawatts installed worldwide. The PV solar market represented one-third of all newly added renewable energy capacity, according to worldwatch.org. And in response to President Obama's summit next week for African leaders, scholars and activists are inviting the public to participate in Empowered Africa, a progressive dialogue on sustainability, peace, and democracy, which will be held this Monday, August 4th at Howard University, right here in Washington, D.C. The Empowered Africa dialogue will provide an alternative space where grassroots citizen activists, scholars, progressive NGOs, and community organizers from Africa and the United States will not only critique significant issues related to U.S.-Africa policy, but also discuss alternative strategies and policies from an aggressive and proactive perspective. Speaking on WPFW's Africa Now, Ni Nkwete, independent geopolitical analyst formerly of African Action and former research director at Trans-Africa Forum, said that it is vital for Americans to challenge U.S. support of corrupt and brutal African dictatorships.
It is Mr. Obama who's bringing all the African leaders here. He is the son of an African. And within months of taking office, he went to Ghana. And he gave a speech that a line in it made a lot of people happy, a lot of African Democrats happy, because he said, Africa doesn't need strong men, it needs strong institutions. So everybody thought, okay, under his watch, the U.S. will cut loose all these dictators. But today, he's supporting Kagame in Rwanda, Museveni in Uganda, Kabila in Congo, and the Ethiopia's Desalegn, and especially Abdel Fattah el-Sisi in Egypt. All these are dictators who are very close U.S. allies. If you take those five, they get the lion's share of U.S. support going to Africa. And we think that is wrong, and we think that people should tell the U.S. that this is not good for Africa, and it is not good for the U.S. And all of them had come to power through the barrel of the gun. Okay, none of them had been elected initially, but the U.S., and here is again the point. If you are doing what the U.S. wants, they don't look at your record. They say, okay, you are doing what we want. You are protecting our interests. We will christen you as the great, wonderful leader for your people. So it's not the people of these countries who are saying these are the leaders we want or like. It's the U.S. deciding that because they are cooperating with us and protecting our interests, we're going to hold them up as wonderful leaders. And I'm saying again, these five, Egypt, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Congo, and Uganda, people should scratch below the surface when they are told these are wonderful leaders. They have committed all kinds of atrocities. Millions have died in the Great Lakes at the hands of these leaders. And the U.S. pumps a lot of money to them, and all five of them are coming here.
Was Ni Nkwete speaking on WPFW's Africa Now with Mwiza Muntali. For more information about Monday's conference at Howard University, go to usaafricanetwork.org. Finally, in our culture and media moment, opening this week in theaters is Guardians of the Galaxy and Get On Up, the biopic on James Brown, starring Chadwick Boseman. Opening next week in the DMV is the documentary Finding Fela about Nigerian superstar Fela Kuti. The movie tells a story about his music and life, social and political impact, and lasting legacy. Continuing at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture in Baltimore is the exhibit For Whom It Stands, which explores the ideas and symbolism of the American flag. And finally, musical artist Lauryn Hill headlines the 2014 Summer Spirit Festival tomorrow at the Meriwether Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. And those are our headlines and our moment of culture and media for today. When we come back, civil disobedience is the latest strategy by activists protesting the slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza. They say, not in our name, not with our tax dollars. We'll be right back.
See what key I want to do to them. Everybody knows that they're guilty. Everybody knows that they lied. Everybody knows that they're guilty. Resting on their conscience, eating their inside. It's freedom. Said it's freedom time now. It's freedom. Said it's freedom time now. Time to get free, or give yourselves up now. It's freedom. Said it's freedom time, y'all. There's a
that was War in the Mind by Lauryn Hill. Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Averam. Well, on a personal note, as the horror of the attack on Gaza has rolled out each day, I find that the carnage unbearable to see or even hear about. I'm personally horrified by the images of right-wing gangs in Israel attacking protesters or celebrating the slaughter of children. I feel shame for journalists mouthing lies and obvious half-truths. I feel more shame, anger, and frustration at knowing that my tax dollars are being spent on the Israeli killing machine and that our elected leaders continue with this Orwellian subservience to the big lie that makes us all complicit in genocide. Activists around the world have felt the same anger and restlessness as they've stepped up their actions to include acts of civil disobedience. Last week, protesters were arrested in New York City inside the offices of Friends of the IDF, a support group for the Israeli army. On Tuesday in New York City, a group of demonstrators blocked traffic by laying down in the streets outside Israel's mission to the United Nations. 26 people were arrested after refusing police orders to disperse. The action was organized by the author and scholar Norma Finkelstein. Tuesday's act of civil disobedience comes one day after 9 Jewish peace activists were arrested protesting the Israeli assault outside the office of the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations. The group of mostly young activists are calling themselves, If Not Now, When? In Seattle, peace activists held a die-in outside the headquarters of Boeing, which manufactures weapons supplied by the Israeli army. Here in D.C. yesterday, Code Pink activists were also arrested outside the Israeli embassy, where they blocked the entrance and refused to move. Here's some sounds from the protest.
May their broken hearts be cradled. May their righteous anger be heard. We sing for justice and healing for all of the mothers.
Free Gaza!
Let the siege on Gaza!
And the killing and the hate! Free Gaza!
Shame on you! Netanyahu, shame on you!
Free Gaza! Free Palestine!
Not another nickel! Not another dime! No more money for Israel's crime!
Thank you, Code Pink!
Thank you, everybody!
All right!
Those were sounds outside the Israeli embassy here in D.C. yesterday, where Code Pink activists demonstrated and were arrested. Well, joining me in the studio today to talk about yesterday's action outside the Israeli embassy is Ben Norton, an activist and intern with Code Pink this summer. And on the line is Allie McCracken. Good morning, Allie.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
And good morning, Ben.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, we just heard sounds from the protest. I know that you were arrested, Ben. What motivated you to participate?
Well, I think there are a variety of factors, but I think the most important
aside from just a sense of justice and solidarity with people around the world and a sense of obligation as a privileged person to do what I can to stand in solidarity with their struggle, but I think even more than that is the fact that as an American, I am bankrolling Israeli crimes. And some people have tried to criticize the Palestinian solidarity movement and say, well, what about the situation in Syria? What about the situation in Libya, etc.? And those are horrific situations, and we should do what we can to stand in solidarity with the people struggling against those injustices. But in the case of Israel-Palestine, the salience is enormous because we, as American citizens, pay $8.5 million per day to Israel in unilateral, unconditional military aid. So this slaughter going on is actually bankrolled by our tax dollars. We are paying for it. And this is not a new conflict. This has been going on for 67 years. Palestinians have been military occupied for 47 years. So as an American, I feel an extreme sense of duty and obligation to stand in solidarity with them and do what I can to get my government's boot off of their neck.
Okay. Now, Ali, you know, I keep hearing all these polls, you know, primarily on like kind of cable outlets that's like CNN that say, you know, most Americans support the attack on Gaza, support, you know, Israel's actions. I feel like I'm living this, you know, Orwellian dystopia or something. Because do you believe these polls? I mean, as someone out here protesting what's happening in Gaza, how do you react to these so-called polls and surveys?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head that it does quite feel like an Orwellian dystopia. Well, the reality of the situation is that we live in a highly militarized society. We live in a country that thinks it's okay to go into countries that have never attacked us and bomb them to smithereens and to send military aid to countries that are known to be an apartheid system. Despite this fact, we see that the tide is actually turning. You know, the dialogue within the United States among the public and among our elected representatives has changed drastically over the last few years from almost unquestioning support for Israel to more questioning and more challenging of our unconditional support for Israel. We see that Keith Ellison wrote an amazing op-ed in the Washington Post yesterday. He had several progressive leaders signing on. And you just listed off some amazing direct actions that activists across the country and even across the world have been engaging in. And I really think that there's a people-powered movement occurring. I think that that's in large part because of the boycott, sanctions, divestment movement that is occurring internationally, calling on individuals and institutions and organizations to boycott Israel. And I really think that hopefully a shift is occurring.
Okay, so, you know, related, you know, to this, you know, type of coverage, how do you think activism is being covered? Like, for example, the protest yesterday here in D.C.
Well, that's a good question. We've seen a horrific failure on the part of the mainstream media to cover the carnage in Gaza. We've seen victim blaming anywhere, you know, from CNN on MSNBC, all across the mainstream media, but I don't know what you can expect when one of the main commentators, Wolf Blitzer on CNN, used to work for AIPAC, the Israel lobby here in the U.S. So, you know, we see that revolving door occurring in the media, and it's up to alternative media like Democracy Now! and WCFW to cover actions like yesterday. And also, we saw a lot of Arab media came out yesterday. We had a Lebanese newspaper, and I think Al Jazeera was out there as well, and that's important to us because we want our friends in the Arab world to know that we're standing in solidarity with the people who are being oppressed by our taxpayer dollars, and we want them to know that not all Americans are sitting by idly.
Okay. Now, Ben, as a young activist, I mean, what do you think can happen now? How do you think your actions that you're taking can have an impact?
Well, I think if you look historically, and you have to always consider these kinds of movements in an historical context, especially in the case of Israel-Palestine, because again, in order to understand what's going on today, you have to understand the Nakba, the ethnic cleansing in 47 and 48. You have to understand the war of occupation in 67. You have to understand the blockade of Gaza and the military occupation of the West Bank. So again, in order to understand all these things, you have to understand their historical context. And in the case of activism, you have to look... you always want to be a nonviolent activist, but sometimes you need to escalate tactics. And you know, in his 63 letter from a Birmingham jail, Martin Luther King Jr. said, you have a moral obligation to break unjust laws. And in the case of civil disobedience, again, we always must remain nonviolent, but you know, sometimes you have to break laws and say, I'm going to stand up in solidarity with people that are being oppressed by my government, and I'm going to refuse to allow my government to continue to oppress them. So as an activist, especially when we're talking, I'm glad Ali mentioned the BDS movement, Boycott, Sanctions, Divest movement. When we're talking about, you know, imposing sanctions or divesting from institutions, the largest institution that we can target, especially as Americans, is the U.S. government. Because yes, it's important that we target corporations like SodaStream and Ahava that are directly invested in illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. But the U.S. government is the largest contributor. Again, $8.5 million a day. So when it comes to activism, it's really important that the BDS movement was called for by Palestinians, so we're not speaking for them. And it's really important that in order to maintain our, like, part of, like, you know, our duty as American activists, it's really important that we do what we can in our country to stop oppressing them. And they will, like all people, be able to liberate themselves when the foreign government's boots are off of their necks.
Okay. So how many folks were arrested yesterday?
There were nine folks, and among us included human rights activist Medea Benjamin, but also, and this hasn't been covered well too, but we were joined by many prominent veterans and actually former CIA officials and such. So Ray McGovern, who's well known as a former CIA official who actually prepared the daily briefing for Bush Sr., he was with us and he got arrested yesterday. Ann Wright, who is a former State Department ambassador or assistant ambassador, she was arrested as well. So we were joined by members of Code Pink. We were joined by prominent former members of government, and we all said enough U.S. aid to apartheid Israel and end the siege in Gaza.
All right, I've been speaking to Ben Norton and Ali McCracken of Code Pink, two activists with Code Pink, and who were outside the Israeli embassy yesterday. Thank you for joining me this morning, Ben and Ali.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Esther.
Okay, and now when we come back, we'll speak to Adam O'Neill, mayor of Belhaven, North Carolina, who has bucked his fellow Republicans and just finished a 272-mile walk from his town to Washington, D.C., to advocate for health care, and we'll prepare to take your calls at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back.
حلم عايش عشانه قلب لمو منقول ديار كان عام ميزو ونار باسم البي ار جينا وعدينا ومثل الانجلينا ورحنا إلها ضربت خبط وصبت هدف احنا إلها
الطرفة صارت أشبال بالضبطك لا ترتاح فيكم مساء صباح بيفكروا يطيرونا مثل مثل عصافير من عشوشا لما تطير ما ماكل وما مسير أنا هون دايما عسير عبصوت.
And welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition, where we lift up voices of social justice and activism. One of the shames of this country is the fact that as many as 17,000 Americans will die directly as a result of states deciding not to expand Medicaid under Obamacare. Researchers from Harvard University and City University of New York have estimated that between 7,000 and 17,000 deaths will be attributable to the lack of Medicaid expansion in opt-out states in a study published in Health Affairs. They projected that more than 400,000 fewer diabetics would receive medication to treat their disease if opt-out states had expanded Medicaid, 659,000 women who are in need of mammograms and 3.1 million women who should receive regular pap smears would have been insured, the study found. In terms of health coverage, expanding states will experience a 48.9% decrease in their uninsured population compared to 18.1% decrease in non-expanding states. 8 million people will remain uninsured because their states didn't expand Medicaid, according to the study. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 25 states plus the District of Columbia are expanding Medicaid under Obamacare, and 23 states are not. Also in a recent study, researchers estimated that between 500 and 1,100 North Carolinians will die from lack of Medicaid access. Last year, Republican state lawmakers turned down money and federal funding for Medicaid expansion, leaving the state without life-saving coverage. When asked about the coverage, the governor has refused to address the situation or has not addressed the activists at all. Unfortunately, thousands of people in North Carolina fall into the coverage gap that was meant to be addressed through expansion of Medicaid under Obamacare. There are more than 15 million uninsured or underinsured people living below the poverty line in the 23 states that have refused to expand Medicaid under the ACA, according to the study. Joining me today, just back from D.C. actually, and back in his hometown in Belhaven, North Carolina, is Mayor Adam O'Neill, who completed this week a 270-mile walk from Belhaven, North Carolina, to Washington, D.C. to draw attention to the Republican policies that are denying millions of Americans health care and that he believes has closed his rural town's only hospital and left some of his residents to die. Good morning, Mayor O'Neill.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us today. So can you start by telling us the story about your town's hospital and why you think that it's been impacted in this way by the cutoff or the non-funding of Medicaid in North Carolina?
Well, there's actually two threats to rural hospitals in our country today. One is Medicaid expansion. Without Medicaid expansion, rural hospitals are struggling mightily to survive. The reason is the Affordable Care Act reduces indigent care reimbursements, but makes up the revenues with Medicaid expansion. Well, if you're in a state that doesn't accept Medicaid expansion, now you have a situation where you're losing revenues and they're not being replaced from anywhere else.
Right.
And rural hospitals fight every year to break even through charitable donations, foundations, and whatever. About 40% of critical access hospitals don't make money each year. So it's very important. Number two, and something that goes along with this, is you have these big healthcare conglomerates, in our case, Vidant Health, that come in and buy these small hospitals and then close them. So we've got a hospital here that also we had this Vidant Health come in, buy our hospital, and close it. Now, Vidant Health in 2012 made $127 million. In 2013 made $109 million. They've got $550 billion of reserves. And they closed a critical access hospital that lost $1 million. They have a CEO that made more than twice what our hospital lost. So you've got the Medicaid expansion hurting the rural hospitals, and then you also have these larger conglomerates that are coming in and taking advantage of these small hospitals as they struggle to survive. So Medicaid expansion plays a big role because we need every bit of revenue we can find to make these hospitals survive.
What kind of response have you gotten from your state capitol, your state legislators, even the governor, when you've asked them about including North Carolina in the Medicaid expansion? I mean, your tax dollars are going into Medicaid and you're not getting them back.
Well, this week the state made a statement that, I think it was the governor made a statement that Medicaid in North Carolina is in shambles, and until they can get it right, they can't consider Medicaid expansion. I think that is a statement that opens the door for them possibly accepting it in the future. Not accepting Medicaid expansion in North Carolina costs the North Carolina healthcare system $10.9 million a year. $10.9 million a day. 10% of one day, $1 million, would have taken care of our hospital and made it break even. So it's significant money. $10.9 million a day is what North Carolina is out by the state government not accepting Medicaid expansion. And by the way, this is money that North Carolinians have paid taxes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So what kind of response did you get here in D.C.? You walked more than 270 miles to D.C. to, you know, address elected officials here. And what kind of response did you get?
Well, of course, the Democrats received me with open arms. The Republicans, our Congressman Walter Jones, actually, I got to talk to his chief of staff. He wasn't able to meet with me.
And you're a Republican, right?
That's right.
Wow.
So the Republicans are not happy about what I'm doing, but I think this is an issue that where you have to put people over politics. It's an issue that Democrats and Republicans need to work together on, because when a hospital closes, people die, and that's a fact. It's just like you just read the statistics about the Harvard study.
Mm-hmm.
About the nation, and then also North Carolina, so many people are going to die from lack of health care. That's serious. And the Affordable Care Act is law now. You know, I think there's been attempts to repeal it about 50-some times. It's a law now, and we have to work by the law. And as far as the state goes, I think they need to accept Medicaid expansion, and then whatever concerns they have, they need to lobby on the federal level, and the congressional delegation of North Carolina needs to be lobbying to shore up any concerns that they have. But to turn away $10.9 million a day of revenue to our health care system, how can anybody think that doesn't affect the quality of care in North Carolina?
All right. Okay. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, where we lift up voices of social justice and activism. I'm Esther Rivera, your host. And it's your turn to call in at 202-588-0893 to comment on today's topic, which is the expansion of Medicaid denied in 23 states, leading to the direct deaths of people. We're talking to Mayor Adam O'Neill, who just completed a 272-mile walk from Belhaven, North Carolina, to Washington, D.C., to advocate for the hospital in his town that was recently closed, and also for Medicaid expansion and health care for people in across the U.S. So we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, I want to continue to talk to Mayor O'Neill, but also take your calls at 202-588-0893. We'll be right back.
Just for my soul.
Just for my soul, I need.
And I'm tired of crying all night. Just for my soul.
Just for my soul, I need.
Lord, I need thee, oh, I need thee to take away this pain and misery. 'Cause God, I just can't do this by myself. I need a help, Lord.
I need a healing for my soul.
Yeah,
so give
yeah.
me a healing for my soul.
Oh,
I need a healing for my soul. So give me a healing for my soul.
And welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition, where we lift up voices of social justice and activism. Today, in this segment, we're talking to Mayor Adam O'Neill of Belhaven, North Carolina, who just finished a 272-mile walk to Washington, D.C. from his town to advocate for Medicaid expansion, better health care for all, and for rural hospitals like the one in his town that was closed. And you can also join in now at 202-588-0893 as we continue to talk to the mayor. He'll stay on the line with me, and we'll go to your calls now. Caller, go ahead. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Yes, my name is Sincere, and I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like to add to this discussion is that there seems to be a naiveness in the American people. I would say not really that America even exists. It's just a hemisphere over here where there are dominators and people who are basically abused. So what I would like to say is that if you hear that the hospitals are closing and, you know, all these kinds of different statistics, that means that that's the goal. So that means that there's some other spreadsheet somewhere with a checkoff going, okay, successful. Okay, that's successful. Okay, how many children are in, okay, that's, how many children are in jail? Okay, that's great. So I think that when people wake up and become realistic and see that the goal is being accomplished. I'm not being pessimistic and saying that, this particular gentleman doesn't have a right to do what he's doing, but the power structure is on the side of those people who basically are the white supremacists. Because when you say the American people are, you know, doing these evil things even in other countries, I'm an American, so-called. I'm not doing that. And when you ask all of the people around who's doing this, it's like, well, who's doing this? And basically, I think that it is the dominant class, the extremely rich, powerful people, basically the white supremacists. And it doesn't matter if they're poor white people who are being captured in this wide net of, you know, let's just decrease these numbers. Because everything that I see is to decrease the numbers. In America, it's to decrease the numbers through health problems, cancer, and all these other things. In other countries, it's drop bombs. You know, other countries, it's, you know, it's just a plethora of things around the world. And okay, it's basically happening to poor and dark people.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Next caller, just say your name and where you're calling from.
Washington, D.C. My name is Idani. I just want to make a comment.
Speak up a little bit, okay?
Mm-hmm. All right. I just want to make a comment about your elder guest, Mr. Mikite, about the summit, the African summit in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
I know he told us about so-called the bad guys, but he didn't tell us the guys who are not invited. And I'm going to tell you something to think about. The two guys that I know that they didn't invite up has a literacy rate 85 and 92. Frederick Douglass have said, if you can read and write, you are free for forever. And I say, if you can read and write, you're not going to be in the business of servitude. Have a good day.
Okay. Okay, Mayor O'Neill, we actually had a caller talking about the health care and just kind of the ignoring of people's ability to receive care. Did you want to make any comment on that?
Well, it's up to the people to step up and demand action by their government. That's why I walked to Washington, D.C., is to put a spotlight on our situation and ask for help. Mm-hmm. And I am somewhat hopeful that we're all going to get some help. I spoke to particularly three congressmen that seemed to really take a issue with what was going on in Belhaven and seemed to have some plans of action that may help us. So I'm not going to give up on government yet, and I hope that these congressmen do what they say. If they do, we're going to have a terrific impact on rural health in this country. And I won't be able to talk about what they're planning on doing until probably a few weeks from now. But I wouldn't give up on our government yet. I think that there are good people in government in certain places, and we have to petition our elected officials and hope for help. Also, HHS is investigating Vidant Health, the big conglomerate that came in here and closed our hospital.
Right.
So, you know, there are some things going on with government that hopefully will remedy the situation and stave off the close of rural hospitals. And the first caller, what she said about a plan to close rural hospitals, I think that would, it would, the devastating part would be if the people don't stand up and you know, push against that. And that's what we're doing.
Right. Okay, 202-588-0893 is the number to call. If you've called the station in the last week, please refrain. We won't take your call during this show today, but we can take your call next week. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. We're talking about health care, the expansion of health, what was supposed to be health care for most Americans being denied to people in at least 23 states where Republicans have refused to take the Medicaid expansion funds, which they have actually paid for through their tax dollars, but they are really hell-bent on not implementing Obamacare, and so the working poor basically are being affected and not getting care. If you're extremely poor, of course you can get Medicaid. If you're in a job with insurance, of course you may have insurance through that. But if you're the working poor, you're kind of in that coverage gap. These are the people who, millions of Americans who aren't receiving coverage. So 202-588-0893 is the number to call if you want to speak on that. Let's go back to the lines. Caller, just say your first name and where you're calling from.
NAFTA from D.C.
Go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, I want to thank this mayor profusely for his courage and commitment and integrity and really just good common sense and going way above and beyond in support of access to affordable, safe, quality health care. I don't know if you all addressed, I apologize, I was listening off and on, that we had the same thing happen here in D.C. when D.C. General closed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've gone down that path. We know what it looks like when the public hospital closes and the sort of band-aids that they put on the healthcare system to try to compensate for what can't be compensated for. It's the government's responsibility to take care of the least of these. The private industry just cannot do it. What I would encourage this mayor to do is to conduct a study. This is something that was not done in D.C., to get a sampling of the patients who were serviced at that public hospital and follow them over a number of years and see what happens to them so that you have hard data to show the impact. We only had anecdotal data here in D.C. We knew what would happen based on other cities for their public hospitals closed, but especially when it's your only public hospital, it's all that people have. So you lose the emergency care, you lose the primary care, you lose the specialty care that just cannot be made up for. So I just want to thank him so very much and let us know what we can do to help.
Okay, thank you so much for that call. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. I think we have another caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Jabari, D.C.?
Yeah, hi, Jabari.
Hey, Doug. I think one of the things that I want to say kudos to the first sister who called and talked about this as being a deliberate scheme. This is not, this level of destruction and chaos is not random. It's by design. But one of the things that people have to do is first recognize that this is by design and stop thinking that that they are the problem, they are the cause. No, it's other people doing this. But one of the things people should do is be very principled and very clear on what they want. What we need in this country is a single payer, Medicaid for all type system, where if you fall down on the street and you get hurt, you can get taken to the hospital and they just treat you. You don't have to give out any cards or any worry about insurance. They treat you, you get paid for, the providers get paid for, and that's it, like they have in every other sane country. But also, I just want to also say to the mayor there that D.C. has experienced the same issues here. We had a hospital, D.C. General, that was closed, I think about 1999, by this city council, and the mayor then, Anthony Williams, who was closing of that hospital has attributed to untold number of deaths also in this city, because that was the only hospital on that side of town. And so D.C. itself is experiencing the same type of stuff, and we as citizens have not stood up and said, look, enough of this stuff. And that's really what, as the mayor was saying, the people are not pissed off enough. We are just too chilled out and are accepting of every level of degradation and oppression they're throwing at us.
Okay.
And at some point, we need to like burst open and stop this stuff.
Okay, thank you. So, Mayor, our caller, Jabari, he mentioned the whole issue of single payer, which was kind of like taken off the table early in the discussions around the ACA. What do you think about that in terms of just single payer is the way we should have gone, and all these problems we're having is because we've adopted this convoluted model that was really a Republican idea in the first place?
Well, the problem is that in Washington, D.C., we have Republicans and Democrats, and they're like oil and water, and they're getting to the point they won't even talk to each other. That's a problem. And it's like, for example, the Affordable Care Act. I think that President Obama probably did the best he could do. And I'm not a big fan of the Affordable Care Act, but he did the best he could do. And the Republicans should be reaching across the aisle and trying to work out a health care law that is as good as it can be. If you take the left and the right and you meet in the middle, a lot of times that's where you're supposed to be. But we've got a situation right now where the right and left aren't even talking to each other, so we're not meeting in the middle on things. So that leaves us with laws and with issues that really don't represent the majority of Americans. And when we talk about the hospital, like in D.C., imagine if a company had closed your hospital and that company was making hundreds of millions of dollars a year, had $500 million of reserves, all due to Medicare and Medicaid, basically. The government's the main payer. And then that company closed your hospital, not your town government, but actually a company bought your hospital who was making lots of money.
On your tax dollars.
Yeah, on your tax dollars, and said, nah, we're going to close this hospital. That's what happened to us. That's what happened to us. And that's something that's going on across the country. So this isn't a matter of, oh, these hospitals can't make it. We even have a business plan that shows our hospital can be profitable. But this big company closed our hospital to force our people to go to their hospital 30 miles away because they know that's the only place we can go. So they did that as a business model. That they didn't care anything about people dying. And that's another thing. We need to somehow remind these companies and these elected officials that people die. And they represent us. And we're not going to be dying due to their decision. And that's where we need to stand up and start causing a little bit more, I guess, discomfort for them.
Okay. 202-588-0893 is the number to call for a community watching comment here on WPFW 89.3. I'm Esther Rivera, I'm your host today for the On the Ground edition. We're talking to Mayor Adam O'Neill of North Carolina, who just finished a 272-mile walk to D.C. from his town, from Belhaven, North Carolina, to advocate for his only hospital serving his town, recently closed, and for expanded Medicaid for all those who would qualify around the country. So 202-588-0893 is the number to call. We're going to take a very brief break, and then we're going to come back with your calls. Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Rivera, I'm your host. Staying with me is Mayor Adam O'Neill of Belhaven, North Carolina. We're talking about expansion of Medicaid and good health care for all Americans. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. We'll take the next caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Randall, and I'm calling from Washington, D.C. And this is sort of about health care in the sense that this is what happened when, and I don't know whether this guy voted Republican or Democrat, but what happened is over the years they have systematically tried to defund the government with this philosophy that the Republicans have had. And a lot of those mool people themselves voted for those very kind of thing because they put, blackface on welfare and all of these things. And those same poor white mool people voted against their own interests. At least they didn't think they were when they did it then. And now they're finding themselves losing out because you can't defund the government just for part of the people. And systematically, I think they were trying to defund the government to help all.
Okay.
So it wouldn't help any poor people.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have another caller? Okay. So, Mayor, as we kind of wind down for today, when I first heard about so many states refusing to take the Medicaid funding and people actually dying because of it. The first case I heard like that was of a single mom in Florida who passed like in February. And she had, worked a series of part-time jobs and really tried her best to maintain insurance, and she just couldn't do it. And I was wondering, why couldn't there be some type of class action lawsuit from patients, from the families of those who have passed? I mean, have you heard anything about that, or what's the status of something like that?
Well, I know that's something that NAACP is considering, and I don't really have, I haven't thought about that a lot, but it is a fact that that money is sitting there, $10.9 million a day for North Carolina, and we're not taking it. And once again, the governor put out a statement saying that Medicaid was in such shambles they couldn't take it yet until they got things in order. Well, I can't see how $10.9 million a day extra revenue can hurt anything. So, I think there is an issue here of the Republicans turning their back. I'm a Republican, but Republicans turning their back on the people, and I am not afraid to talk about that. My Republican colleagues have not taken me to task on it because they can't argue with me because there's no logical argument against it. And I'm not somebody that's going to sit there and watch something I think's wrong go on and not say something.
Okay. Caller, you're on the air. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Isaac.
Okay.
Are
welcome.
You ready?
Welcome. You're on the air.
Yes. I have something. I have a question for the governor. With all due respect, I couldn't get over to the
radio. It's not governor. It's mayor.
Mayor. Mm-hmm. I'll be able to get over there with the mayor to shake his hand because, I appreciate everything he's doing, and I appreciate WPFW. But the question I'm asking is, we just appropriated over $100 million to El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. They split up $100 million apiece, almost $100 million apiece. And where is it that we don't have money to give to a mayor in a hospital in his state?
Right. Okay. Thank you so much for calling. And, you'll actually have the last word this morning. And, it kind of joins together our two subjects for the day. Our tax dollars, our funds going to Gaza, and our tax funds not being used to help people right here in the United States. Thanks to Mike Nasella. I'm signing off today. You can reach us at onthegroundshow.org, and you can also reach us on Facebook and Twitter at On The Ground Show. Stay tuned for Askia Muhammad with the news, followed by Chris the Property, and don't forget the blues. Peace.